Next technique is your nominal group technique. So this technique follows restrictive interpersonal communication during the decision and making discussions. Okay, so this is restrictive in terms of interpersonal communication. So once the issue has been explained to the group, the following steps takes place. Without any discussion, each member independently has to come up and pen down his ideas. Each member shares one idea with the group with no pre-discussion. Okay, happening until all ideas have been presented and recorded. So which means it encourages individual thinking in place here. So you've been given the topic of the discussion, and once the issue has been explained, you cannot do lateral discussion. You have to straight away come up with your thoughts. You have to pen down your ideas. Till the time everybody has penned down and has been recorded, you do not get into the discussion mode. A discussion follows to clarify and assess the idea. So after you have put down your ideas, this also encourages individual, you can actually identify the individual thinkers and also leadership there, right? So a discussion follows to clarify and assess the ideas. Now after that, after everything has been recorded, there is a discussion which gets followed, so that you are able to make an assessment of the ideas. Finally, each member individually, without any discussion, ranks all the ideas. Then you prioritize it ranking wise, which seems to be, you know, fantastic. The number one, immediately probable and feasible to be able to implement. So one, two, and you know, on a scale of a particular order, they will just put the scale together. They will rank all the ideas. The idea that receives the highest aggregate ranking leads to the final decision. So whoever says whichever idea gets maximum ticks will actually be the final decision point. Another one is the most favorite one, which is going on now, electronic meeting. This is a recent approach to group decision. It involves blending the nominal group technique with electronic technology. Like how initially we were saying that we are going and doing a face-to-face discussion. So it's more or less face-to-face discussion, however, in virtual mode using a technology. And is called as a computer-assisted. Is called a computer-assisted group. A maximum of 50 people sit around a horseshoe-shaped table. You are on video conference and having series of networked laptops. Laptops are connected to each other. Everybody is online. Once problem has been explained, individuals type their responses into their machines. The moment is in the chat box. They put their ideas together and shares it. Their comments and aggregate votes are finally projected on a screen. So everybody's votes have been collated together, and then they say that, okay, in the last 45 minutes or 30 minutes that we have discussed, this is what the group has to say. The popularity of Teams is owing to various factors. So sometimes the teams are inseparable from the organizational environment. So the popularity of Teams is owing to various factors. Okay, so first is the teams aid in better utilization of individual talents, which helps organization to compete more effectively and efficiently. So they are utilized. If you are using away from the organizational context and you use the term teams and you aid them with, you see that they are better utilized their skills rather than being in the individual, where individual talents are getting honed and getting recognized, which helps the organization to compete more effectively and efficiently. So even if you are working, doesn't matter if you're working in teams also, but you're able to utilize the talent, individual talent, more effectively, which means it's a success for the organization. So teams have greater flexibility and responsiveness to change than the traditional departments. Like, so instead of traditional departments, when you create teams or groups, they are more flexible because they are not bonded with hierarchical mechanisms here. So hence they are more free to generate their ideas, come into better decisions and be more accountable. Teams are an effective in increasing individual participation in decisions making and increase employee motivation. So when you are in teams, you are very effective. Individual participation gets increased because otherwise it becomes very hierarchical, and you probably have shared your ideas in the closed doors, which does not get recognized. But here it's all in open, and everything is in the form of techniques which gets due recognition as well. So hence there is a better motivation as well amongst the employees. So groups and teams are not the same. So let us look at their various differences here. Okay, so there's a difference between groups and teams. So what do you mean by work group? Work group is a group that connects mainly to share information and make decisions in order to help each member perform within his or her respective area of responsibility. So work group is basically created in the organization mainly to share the information, the people who are facing problems while making decisions. So you help each other, you help the members of the team to be able to perform effectively in their respective domain. The members of these groups may have different goals to achieve and need not engage in joint work regarding combined efforts. So they not necessarily work in a common project. They might be doing their own respective jobs together, but the only idea is that you are being connected together so that you get necessary help as required or support as required. Okay, so all these members of the group may be working, of this work group may be working for their individual goals. Okay, they might not get engaged in joint work at all. Work team. Now this was work group and this is work team. Work team is a group that connects to perform and achieve a common goal. Now can you see the difference between the two? Here there's no common goal. Everybody has got their own individual goals to work. Just that for support and to have better decision making, they are being categorized into a group. Here work group is a group which connects to perform and achieve a common goal through a collaborative effort. So, which means they hone each other's skill, they collaborate with each other with their strengths. So, this coordinated effort generates positive synergy. So, there's a lot of positive synergy here because everybody works with each other's skills. Okay, that is, and they collaborate with each other to be able to perform in such a way that they achieve their common goal. Individual efforts lead to performance. Greater than simple addition of individual contributions. Okay, so here the group goals are more prime while performing because here group reward and group recognition is what is more important here. Okay, so that's the difference between work group and work team. So you can see in the table here, work group and work team. What is the objective of a work group? Sharing of information amongst members. Okay, so and work team collectively perform towards a common purpose. Here there is no common purpose, here there is a common purpose. And everybody is working individually, only taking support. Here, only sharing of information is happening. And here, they're performing skills collectively. They're using each other's skills to collaborate. Ownership, work group, limited ownership. Feeling of ownership as low commitment towards group tasks because there is no group task involved as such. Everybody is working for their own individual goal. Work team, strong feeling of ownership as high commitment towards the team task because you're working for a common purpose. Synergy, here mostly neutral and sometimes maybe negative also. Here mostly positive because you're all working together. Dependence, interdependence, low interdependence because here you're working alone. You are not operating in the group formation. Here you're using high interdependence among the team members who operate in high degree of coordination with each other, right? So accountability, individual accountability, and here mutual accountability, both individual and mutual accountability. Skills and abilities, the skills and abilities tend to be random and varied. Here the skills and abilities tend to be complementary because you're using each other's skills. Right? So the four most common types of teams in an organization are the first one, which is your problem solving team. Second one, which is your self-managed work teams. The third, which is your cross-functional team. And the fourth one, which is your virtual team. So these are the most common in any organization that you go, you will find these four types of teams. Problem solving, who are responsible for solving the problems. We will deep dive into it. However, we need to understand the terminologies. The second one is self-managed, so which means remotely managed, self-managed work teams. The third one is your cross-functional teams, and which is means teams from different functions working together. And then fourth one is your virtual teams. Problem-solving teams traditionally were formed by 5 to 12 members of a department. They meet for a few hours on a weekly basis to discuss and then to identify the identify the alternatives of improving the quality, efficiency, and the work environment. So as a whole, to improve the efficiency or the effectiveness of a particular work-related issue, which is a very departmental in nature. So this is basically forms a problem-solving team. Such teams have no authority to execute their recommendations. They were purely formed for coming out with ideas and suggestions. So they cannot authorize, they cannot exercise any power here. They can only recommend the different kinds of, they can only share different kinds of ideas and suggestions, okay, and connected to the critical organizational issues. And such teams are currently used. And unlike if you see here, it is more departmental. Now, can you see it is improving quality, efficiency, and the work environment. So such teams had no authority to execute their recommendations. They are not power centric. They are not they are not authorized with power. They only are supposed to. They are purely formed because of the technical expertise that they bring in, and which links to the organizational need. Okay, so they can only time and again they can only suggest ideas and recommendations, nothing else. Okay, and self-managed work teams, unlike problem-solving teams, these teams are created to both resolve the issue and execute the solution and be responsible for consequences as well. So which means this team is completely accountable. So they are supposed to come up with the resolution, they have to resolve it, they have to execute the, they have to apply the idea that they have come up with. They have to resolve the issue and they have to execute the solution as well. And if something goes wrong, they have to be accountable for it as well. So these responsibilities include planning and scheduling of their work, allocation of work, decision making, solving problems, and at times even select their own members of the team, okay, and assess each other's performance. So in them, managerial roles are reduced to almost nil. One of the major downside of self-managed team is that if it's managed poorly, the conflict can just multiply. And in a conflict situation, members do not cooperate. So if there is a conflict happening in within the self-managed work team, because there is nobody to watch for, so they will not, the members will not cooperate, there will be struggle for power, the team will not perform effectively. And in some teams, higher absenteeism happens. People will just not show up and there will be tendency to leave. There will be turnovers happening. So these teams, now comes your cross-functional teams. Now when you, the interdepartmental people work together. So these teams made up of people from different functional areas, but some hierarchical level who have come together to achieve a common goal. The advantage of cross-functional team is that people from diverse areas contribute to exchange information, they create new ideas, resolve issues, and coordinate with complex projects. So the different functional teams are areas are people from different functional areas have been involved together, and but they are the concept is very clear here is that they have to be in the contemporary levels, hierarchy levels. It cannot be top down, bottom up kind of a arrangement. It has to be the same hierarchical level who will actually come together to just achieve a common goal. So that's what is cross-functional team all about. The advantage here is that people from diverse areas will contribute to exchange the ideas, resolve issues, and they will be able to coordinate with complex projects as well, because they are from different functions. So we'll have definitely much more expertise than a common group. Okay, so they are very different. They are very difficult to manage, especially because in the forming stage itself, because members are learning to work with diversity. Everybody brings in, some are very technical in nature, some are very generic in nature, some are very supportive in nature. So initially at the forming stage only, they will go through a multiple back and forth. Okay, there will be a lot of complexities involved in the initial stages. Then the last one, which is your virtual teams. This has become like the talk of the town now. These teams comprises of members physically spread over different geographical areas, united together by a technology. So one of the challenges of virtual team is that there is very less social support. And there's no social support at all, I would say. It's very directed on your own. Okay, it's a very self-directed. There's no face-to-face interaction as such. Sometimes your videos will be on, sometimes it will be off. So you don't even see the person. There, you just know the person's name and you've been interacting with him, but you don't have a face with that name. So consequently, they are good at sharing unique information, but overall, less information because of the fact that they don't know, and because of the remote accessibility, they have a limitation in terms of bonding. So hence you will see that there is a tendency of sharing only the unique information which is required, but they will not share everything because there is no friendly terms developed because of the virtuality. So in order to make these teams effective, it must be ensured that there is a trust developed amongst the team members. And progress of the team is reviewed and tracked regularly. So regularly you are getting reviewed. Regularly you are, your progress is being monitored. So regularly you have an update. What is happening in X country? What is happening in Y country? So you have this real-time data with you. Adequate resources. So what are the factors that are responsible? Now we talked about the types of teams. Now we are heading towards factors that are responsible for effectiveness of the team. What are the first factor is your adequate resources. If there is adequate resources, any team may require information, equipment, staff, and these resources may be available externally. So availability of adequate resources will definitely help the team to be more effective in their work. And if there is scarcity, it will lead into reduction in effectiveness because you will invest time on fetching the resources and you will be having resource crunch. With minimum resources, you will have to bring in maximum efforts. So hence, it might lead into ineffectiveness. Leadership and structure. For smooth functioning of the team, leadership and structure is required. Okay, so this ensures that there is agreement on norms and division of work within the teams, and all efforts are combined together, synergistically coordinated towards a common goal. In order to have smooth movement of the team, there is a structure which is required, okay? And this ensured that, so if you know that who is your leader, who is taking a decision in pertaining to the group, then there is a little clarity. So this ensures that there is an agreement on the norms and the allocation of work within the team, okay? And how you have to put together the efforts together to come to a common goal. Climate of the trust, climate of trust. Trust among the team members and in the leadership makes the teams effective. This interpersonal trust fosters cooperation, bonding, and self-drive to perform. Okay, so trust among the team members in the leadership makes the teams very, very effective. This is very, very known fact that when you have trust and confidence in your leader, and you trust the teams, the peers of yours, it will definitely bring in more cohesiveness, and obviously the results will be effective. The interpersonal trust always brings in cooperation. There is a huge bonding which develops, and there is a self-motivation to perform. Performance evaluation and reward systems. Effectiveness of the team will be high if the team members are made both individually as well as jointly accountable. Okay, so both individually you're responsible and accountable for a certain tasks, and together also jointly also you're accountable. So this can be done by having a group performance evaluation and reward system. So you have to time and again put together the evaluation, group performance evaluation in place, and you have to time keep rewarding. Do not keep the reward system, you know, annual and all of that, and we'll see when the project gets completed. So it will not motivate. So this will foster motivation only when you do timely reward. In addition to individual performance evaluations and effective incentives. Abilities of members. Team effective performance depends on the knowledge, skills, and attitudes of their members as well. So even though a team's performance is not the simple sum of each member, it's not the total of everyone putting together, total of the abilities of the team members, but these abilities to define the limits of performance because of an effectiveness. Because if you know the skill sets, if the skill sets are not optimum enough to be able to cater to the need of the project, you will know the you know, you'll anticipate, you'll be able to anticipate the success and the effectiveness of it. So hence it will also depend on the abilities of the one of the factor which is responsible for effectiveness would be abilities of the team members. Personality of the members, the individual personality traits affect team performance in addition to individual behavior. Allocation of roles. Teams select members basis their skills and preferences, keeping in mind the roles within the teams. Okay, so how do you allocate the roles effectively? So they select the team members with the understanding of the skills and the preferences, and keeping in mind the preferences that they would have in terms of location, in terms of the peers, in terms of the kind of people that they would like to work with. In order to enhance the team coordination, leaders must consider strengths of each member. They should not give best out them with skills which are not strengths for the member. Okay, so they should always consider their strengths, identify the strengths of each member, and accordingly allocate their work, and also keep in mind their preferred style. Diversity of members. We have been speaking about diversity for a while now, and different forms of diversity have different impacts on team's effectiveness, but most cases tend to impact negatively. Okay, so cultural diversity to some extent may have a positive impact on diverse teams with the initial adjustment issues. So cultural diversity may have a positive impact, but a lot of times diversity has posed as a negative impact as well. So we'll have to keep in mind the diversity of members as well. Size. Smaller the size, tend to have better effectiveness in terms of bonding, in terms of cohesiveness, and more cohesiveness means better result and better effectiveness. It is recommended using the smallest possible team size required to complete the task. So as much as possible, try to make it as concise and small as possible. The member preferences. When people who prefer to work alone are required to work in team, there is a direct threat to the team's morale. Okay, so there are people who are, as we discussed about the personalities earlier, that a person who is an N, a person who like to live with their, own world, extroversion versus introversion, if you remember. So a person who is introverted will always prefer working with his own self because he's so busy and so engaged with his own self that he does not require and doesn't see the need for interaction with others. Okay, so then for him to work in a team environment itself is a big challenge. So when selecting the team members, managers should consider individual preferences and include people who prefer working in a team. And so extroversion people to be put together, introversion people to be left alone, and give them projects, give them tasks which are more self-directed. Common plan and purpose. Establishing the shared mission and plan is the key to the effectiveness of a team. So thus, members of effective team tend to devote time and energies towards arriving at a shared plan. So this is a very, very important common plan, and because ultimately the end result is to work and achieve the common goal. So of a team, so establish the shared mission and the plan in the beginning itself, and members of the effective team should be able to devote time and energies towards arriving at a shared plan and purpose, giving them a sense of direction, because they should be able to understand what are they on the right path. So hence the direction needs to be given, guidance needs to be given to the, so that they are able to arrive at the common objective, common objective, with under all kinds of obstacles, even in spite of the fact that there are circumstances which are leading to challenges, but due guidance and due directions on timely directions will help them to achieve the common goal. SMART goals. So as the acronym says, SMART, we all know that it is specific, measurable, achievable, and relevant, and time-bound goals. So such goals ensure So if you create your goals basis the SMART goals concept, you will sure have clear communication, and you will be able to help maintain the focus on the results. Team efficacy implies the degree of confidence and belief to succeed the team has in itself. That's the team efficacy. The first thing is the belief and the degree of confidence that you have in the team in itself. Okay, so if you do not believe in the team itself in the beginning, there is a sure shot a road to failure ahead, because you with a disbelief you have embarked on the journey. So in the beginning, if you have a belief, no matter how disparate the team is, you still have confidence, you will definitely come into and achieve the common goal. Earlier successes enhance confidence for future successes, resulting in motivation to work harder. So initially, if you succeed, you will definitely enhance to and then look forward to be able to have the positive end result. Conflicts of the team. So contrary to the belief, not only conflicts in a team are necessarily understandable, but it is seen that conflict and team performance have a complex relationship. So if there is a conflict which is not being taken care of, there is a sure shot reason enough to be able to have hamper in the performance. Though relationship conflicts may be dysfunctional, the task conflicts tend to be productive by stimulating discussions. So if at all, if the relationship are dysfunctional and they are not being able to, you know, gel well, they're not able to bond together, you know, the task conflict tend to be, sometimes the task leads into competition as well. So they tend to be productive by stimulating discussions, critical evaluation of alternatives and better decisions. So these are some of the ways and means to balance out and take care of the team conflicts. So conflicts and performance both are interrelated. If there is a conflict, the performance definitely can get shaken up. Social loafing, which we have discussed earlier, social loafing can negatively impact the effectiveness. Social loafing means not putting in enough effort because of the fact that others are involved. Effective teams minimize this tendency by making members individually and jointly accountable. So if you create DRIs, if you create direct responsive individuals, you will sure shot be able to get rid of social loafing. The various drawbacks of teams. So what are the drawbacks of teams? So teams require greater time and resources than individuals. So this is why a lot of organization actually promotes the culture of individuality and do not get into this team formation, because it takes a lot of time to in fact form the team. So teams have also high demands of communication and adjustment. There are a lot of avenues that you have to create where you will have to continuously communicate. Teams initial formation period can be unproductive for work. Team working benefits do not get realized when some members of the team possess poor team spirit. Team decision making may be rendered ineffective by group shift and groupthink phenomenon. So if you remember, we did this whole concept, group shift and the groupthink phenomena. So if you have, the team decisions may go ineffective when you, move from group shift and groupthink phenomena, because you will always undermine, the viewpoints of few members at least. So this is how you will end up being a bad or maybe ineffective decision making. One of the biggest team communication, one of the biggest sources of interpersonal conflict which happens within the groups is because of the poor communication. So ideal communication would happen only when information transmitted is perceived by the receiver exactly how it has been pictured by the sender. So this is not always possible. Okay, people will consider it as an ideal communication only when you receive exactly the way the information has been shared. It sometimes may go through various channels, and ultimately by the time it reaches you, it might get a lot of distractions. But that is how the perception gets built, that it has to be completely mirrored. The picture has to be completely mirrored by the receiver. for most employees, business communication takes place over many different channels. Instant messaging apps like, you know, Slack, WhatsApp, all of this, you know. So there are a lot of, it rules out all kinds of time lags that you might go through, and you can use of, you can make use of the instant messaging facility. What are the functions of communication? Functions of communication within a team are given below. Almost every group communication performs one or more of these functions. First is your control of members' behaviors. I mean, how do you control different members, different behave differently? How do we control, how do we take a control and cognizance of that? Second is how do we motivate emotional expressions, facilitate a decision making. So the communication process, how it works, the main parts of this process are that the sender is transmitting an encoding a message. This is the message. The sender is sending it through, say, let's take an example of email. So the sender is sending an email, is encoding the message by the form of email. And the receiver gets decoded by the form of opening and reading the email. Okay. And till the time the receiver does not get a, give a feedback back to the sender, your communication isn't complete. Okay, so while you're transmitting the message, it could have noise, it could have a barrier. Probably your internet went, you completely, your internet conked off. You thought you have already, you have pressed the send button. You have already, you thought by that time the internet disconnect happened and your message actually did not get sent. And the next day morning, and the message was important enough, you had to receive the reply. So next day you are, you know, sending a mail, highlighting it to everybody saying that, you know, by the end of the day, you did not receive. Whereas the message did not even receive. Is not even received or decoded by the receiver, right? So till the time you do not get a feedback, before bursting out your anger or before reacting to the situation, make sure that you get the feedback first. Did you receive the mail? I am expecting it. So either you write a mail again or maybe call or whatever. Or if you're calling, while you're transmitting the message, maybe there are noise in the background. So hence the receiver could not decode it properly. So there could be a distortion in the message. Till the time you get a feedback from the receiver back, your communication isn't complete. So this is the communication process that you go through. Now, communication direction. What is your vertical communication? Now, what do you mean by vertical communication? There, under vertical communication, there are two types. Downward and upward. Downward communication, when the communication direction is from the higher level to a group of lower level, is termed as your downward communication. When your communication flows down from leadership to the bottom line. And upward communication, where your communication is directed from the bottom up. Okay, from the lower level of employees to the leadership level. So that's called as your upward communication. Horizontal, when your communication is happening amongst the same work team members, peer groups, or any other lateral equivalent employee. This is termed as your horizontal communication. This communication saves time because you just pass on the information. That's it. It's easily accessible. Facilitates coordination and maybe formally sanctioned when there is need to circumvent hierarchy and speed up the action. So if you do not require too much of escalations, too much of proper channel need not to be administered, what you can do is you can just informally pass the information and speed up the actions. Oral communication. So under interpersonal communication, we have oral communication, which is the main mode of transferring our messages. Right now what we are doing is oral communication. Some of the popular forms of oral communications include your speeches, formal one-to-one discussions, group discussions, and informal forms known as your grapevine, which is your gossips. Okay, so it is also called as grapevine in an organization. A major demerit of potential distortion occurs when message needs to be passed through various people. Okay, if the message is going through various people via, with each person decoding the message in his or her own capacity, the message content reaching the final destination may not be the intended one, may not be the original, may not be in the original version. It might just go through multiple changes, multiple distortions, and hence by the time it received the destination, it has already been distorted further down. Yeah, written communication. This is mainly tangible and is verifiable mode of communication. This is transmitted through written records, written words or symbols. It may include your memos, it may include your letters, your fax, your emails, instant messaging, notices on bulletin boards, all anything which is in the form of words and symbols is your written communication. The merits of written communication is that it includes a record with both sender and the receiver. So storing for an indefinite period, you can store it for an indefinite period. If it is on an electronic device, you can just save the file. Message physically accessible, and for clarifications, if it's required, you can always take back the message saying that, but can you please provide some clarity here? And message tends to be more thoroughly thought through, logical, and also clear. One of the demerits of this communication is that it is very time consuming, and there's a lack of instant feedback. You do not get instant feedback like the way we shared. So you will have to wait for the turnaround time. Non-verbal communication. So when we are engaging in verbal communications, we may also engage in non-verbal communication. Right now when I'm sharing, when I'm showing these gestures to you, the eye contact that I'm making with you is the non-verbal communication that I'm going through. Right? So it's a non-verbal component. May completely be independent as well. So non-verbal communication may include your body language, the tone of your voice, the expression of your face, physical distance that you would maintain between the sender and the receiver. So these all these compositely form the components of non-verbal communication. Electronic communication, which is your email. This electronic in communication utilizes the internet to send and receive the computer-generated text and documents. So without the use of, this is what is electronic communication is all about, without the use of electronic media, you won't be able to communicate. So the one interface that is there, or one mode of communication which is there in between the sender and the receiver, is the electronic communication, which is your utilizing the internet. There are limitations to email communication, by the way. So what are those? It can result in misinterpreting the message. It may be an inappropriate means to communicate. Sometimes some information is not supposed to be written on email. So you may tend to just write it on an email. It can be very time consuming. You do not have time. You want to get the act together as early as possible, but you're sending an email and the person has already left the job. He will only be able to check it the next day. So it provides limited alternatives for expression of emotions. It may have privacy concerns, especially in case of confidential information being transferred. Thank you so much.